Ready?
Yeah.
Okay. My name is Michael Parker. I'm a volunteer with the Samuel Proctor Oral History Program at the University of Florida in the United States Library of Congress. Today's date is October 8th, 2018, and I'm at the home of Robert Bob Emick. Mr. Emick, would you please state your full name and when and where you were born?
My name is Robert Frederick Emick. I was born in August 22.
That was 1922?
1922 at Scranton, Pennsylvania.
And do you go by Bob?
I go by Bob.
Okay. Bob, tell us, what's the earliest memory you have as a child?
Basically, I would say we lost our home in the end of February when everybody was losing their homes, I guess.
And where were you living at the time?
We were living in Scranton, Pennsylvania, in our own home that my dad and his brother built. And we built another house just next door for their sisters. So we were together for a long time.
And do you have any siblings?
Yeah, well, I had two children.
How about your brother or sister? You had brothers or sisters?
I had one brother. And, no.
Yeah, what was your brother's name?
Donald.
And what was Donald in the war?
Donald tried to join when he found out I was in trouble, but he was too young. And he finally got old enough and then joined the Marines, and then the war ended.
And so you were the first born in your family?
Yes.
Let's talk about your family. Let's talk about your father.
Well, my father was a hard worker. Before the bad times, he was a carpenter. And after he lost his job and we lost our house, his sister gave him enough money to buy a truck. And he bought a used truck, never did have a new one, and started selling pieces of ice and coal. And he worked and worked and worked very hard the rest of my life and his life, I guess, too.
Was he in World War One?
Yes, he was in World War One, and I'm amazed at him. After he died, we got some information that his wife was keeping, and I'd never seen before. But he was, he and my wife never got past the fourth grade in their education. But he had some memos there that he learned how to operate a large gun, where it had to be adjusted and to go where we were looking to go. And I was surprised that this requires more than I thought he could ever do.
Do you remember where he, any stories that he told you about World War One? What he did in the war?
I didn't know he was in World War One.
Okay.
Never knew. He was born, or he was in, taken in 1980. He was 21 years old, and he wasn't married. And I never knew that he was in the war even.
But let's talk about your mother. What's your mother's name?
My mother is Irene.
And what do you remember about Irene?
Her name's Cook, K-O-C-H. It was spelled differently in a couple of places. And she was strictly a homeowner, or a home worker. She took care of us. I never remember taking too many trips. We had one friend up in New York, and we used to go there once every couple of years. Otherwise, it was strictly work. And we liked each other.
Did you go to school?
I went there at school in Scranton, Pennsylvania.
And do you remember your elementary school?
My elementary school, I remember because I was kind of forced there when we lost our house, our first house, and we had to rent another one, and I was put in...
Was it called Monroe Elementary?
Yes, it was the Monroe Elementary School. I was, I think, fourth grade.
And then in high school, where did you go to high school? Do you remember?
High school was in Scranton, Pennsylvania. And they had a choice of two high schools. One, if you went there, you went to college. And the other one, you went and... to prepare for work.
Okay, was that called Tech High School?
Yes, that was.
And did you like school?
Yeah, I liked the school. I never disliked it.
What did you learn? Did you get anything that you really liked learning?
Well, I took German. I did what I was going to do. I didn't mind it. I never heard, and I went to school.
What did you learn? Did you learn anything like in the electrical field or mechanical field?
Yes, I went to the high school where you did learn these things. In the first 2 years, you do a little bit of everything, and then the last 2 years, you pick one of them and concentrate on that. And that's what I did, and I ended up using that information, and that helped.
Were you active in any sports during high school?
I tried to be active. I knew I could be on the team for running, but I never could do it because my dad at the time was in business, and he was delivering ice and coal, and he had a lot of periods in which he had to needed help. And I was the helper. I'd get out of college and there he would be parked with a 3-ton on his, of coal on his vehicle waiting for me to help him. And I could never, especially our competition always took place on Saturday, and no way would I ever have a free Friday. As Saturday, yeah.
So your growing up as a child was a little rough, as opposed to other kids when it came to kids playing around. You seemed like you worked more than you played.
Yeah, I did. I worked more, and I never avoided work. I guess I was after my dad. He worked and worked, and I guess I did too.
When did you graduate from high school? Do you recall?
Yeah, I graduated in 1939.
All right. And in 1939, can you tell me a story about the prom and the following year about the prom?
Well, Eleanor and I met during high school.
You said Eleanor?
Eleanor. That's my wife's name. Okay. It was my name, to be her name. And what was I saying?
We're talking about the prom.
Oh, the prom. The prom. We always had a car, but it was always about 10 years old. And Eleanor got dressed up fancy. Her father was working regularly as a milkman. And she wanted to go. We went dancing after our dinner, and she wanted to go. So we teamed up with another couple, and one of his uncles had a new car, and he talked his uncle into me driving his new car. And it was in January then, and the snow was, and he was different, whatever was his.
How did you do driving in the snow?
Well, I skidded on one turn, and he wanted to take his car home right away. But we went and finished and did our dance and got the car back eventually. And that was the first new car I was ever in. And probably a long time before I was in another one.
What did you do after you graduated? Did you get a job?
I graduated from high school, and I promised my girlfriend at the time that I would just hang around and take her dancing at her in 1 year when she graduated. And an uncle of mine got me a job where he had half school and half operation, and I spent that year doing that. And at the end of the year, we did our normal dancing and that, and I think it was maybe warm weather, May. An uncle of mine who was working out where I went, he says, come with me and I'll get you a job. And that's when I went away from Scranton, and I went and got a job with Ford.
Ford Motor Company.
Ford Motor Company.
Okay. Yeah.
They had built a new building called the Aero, that they were making parts for airplanes. And my prior studies, I guess, got me it wasn't hard to get a job then, but if you had a little bit ahead of time, they took better care of you, and I was doing real well.
Okay. And then what happened? Where were you on December 7th, 1941? Were you there at Ford?
1941.
December 7th.
December 7th.
When the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor.
Oh, yeah. I was working at Ford's. everybody stopped working when we heard that what had happened. And then we went back to work.
Okay, when did you join the service?
I joined that in, what was it, November, October.
Yeah.
October of 41 or 2, 42. I went to the people that were hiring me, or whatever you want to call it. They said, what do you want to do? And I said, geez, I don't know. And he said, well, how about the Army? I didn't know. I said, I don't want to walk that far. And they said, well, how if you got in the Air Corps? And I said, yeah, Air Corps would be fine. I spent my earlier years with my Lynn flying rubber band airplanes, and I painted a couple, and my dad's sister, my aunt, I guess, started painting, and the two of us used to do pretty good, but I quit, and she's made beautiful pictures.
All right, so back in October of 1942, when you joined the service, and you decided you didn't want to walk,
yeah,
you want to fly, why don't you go ahead and tell us your story about what you did in the war?
What I did in the war?
Starting with when you were enlisted in Detroit, Michigan.
All right, well, Detroit, Michigan, they put me in a railroad car with a whole bunch of us and sent us to Florida in January. I thought this would breeze.
Where'd you go in Florida?
Well, Florida, we just learned the basics of how to dress and what you do and this. But the big thing in Florida was they had just, the Army had just found out that the Germans had landed spies at Miami out of a submarine. And one of their, two of the Germans spilled the beans to us, and we captured everybody. This was before I got there. All the Germans, we caught them. But we then started marching, or every night we covered the beach.
So this is, you took a railroad to Miami Beach and for basic training, and then what happened? Where did you go?
Well, they decided that I didn't have enough they sent me to college.
Was that called the College Training Detachment?
That's what it was, College Training Detachment. I was right there at Miami. They sent me to the University of Tampa.
And what did you learn at the College Training Detachment?
Well, I think it was four subjects that they put me with. I think there were about 50 of us that went there at that time. And we were the first group that ever went to a college like that. And I know I'm not sure what I studied.
That's okay. I'm holding in my hands 20 pages of a document that's entitled Robert F. Emick, military history. I showed the document to you, and you said that you wrote this a while ago. On the very first page, it says that you went to San Antonio, Texas for your pre-flight training, and then you went to El Reno, Oklahoma, called Mustang Field and pilot training, and then Ellington Field, Houston, Texas. Then you were reassigned to San Marcos, Texas, and then it says navigator training. You tell us what happened. You went to become a pilot, and then you went to become a navigator. What happened?
Well, I could do everything except one thing in piloting, and that was to land the aircraft. And I knew, and they knew, that I had this, what is that problem called? They knew I couldn't do it. I couldn't line up two sticks 3 feet down at a time without bouncing the airplane bad.
All right, I'm going to stop the recording until this noise is stopped after session.
Yeah.
On 3, 2, 1, go.
Yeah, well, we were allowed so many hours to be able to go on to another airplane. And my problem was my depth perception was off, and I couldn't land the one that plane that I had, and I wouldn't be able to land any other airplane either. So they had asked me if I were interested in being a navigator, I said, yes, I would do that. And that's where I ended up as a navigator.
All right, tell us a story about becoming a navigator. Did they send you to San Marcos, Texas to train for as being a navigator? Or Houston?
I think there was a class of about 40. 35 or something like that, and we all went to school together, and then we were, after about 2-3 weeks of schooling, we started flying. And what happened there is the final deal for us was that we flew in airplanes where we had three people learning, and the pilot and the co-pilot, and we would take off at the beginning of night, and the first person would take the charge of the airplane and determine where we were going. And after about 2 hours, they would change, and the second person would take over. And the first person would follow whatever they didn't think he was doing. And then it finally came to me, and I was the third person, and I made a correction that was, if we didn't make it, we would never have seen our target. So I was the third person, and I corrected where I thought we should do, and we ended up within a mile, I guess, of this town that we were looking for. And I guess I did really well on that, but the other two must have done pretty good, because we all graduated and became
navigators.
Navigators.
And what airplane did you fly in?
I don't know what it was. I don't know what it was.
Do you remember, in the war, what airplane did you fly in the war?
In the war?
Yeah.
B-24s.
So you were a B-24 navigator?
Yeah.
Could you tell us about after graduation, what happened? I see, according to this document, you were at Peterson Field, Oh, you went to Peterson Field.
In Colorado,
And you joined your crew members. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. Well, what happened there is we graduated from our position, that's where we got together as a crew, we went to St. Pete one time, and we landed, and it snowed that evening, and we had snow, I don't know, 4 or 5 feet deep, I think, on the runway. We had to stay there a couple of days. But also, that was not where we were learning to fly together. That was where we had to land because of the snow. But our ordinary flying, we would take off at night, usually at night, or it became night real quick when you got up. And we would be training.
Let me go back a little bit. I saw this in one of your documents that you trained, before flying, you trained on a simulator.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about the simulator.
Okay. After we trained as a team, they took the navigators for a specialty, this was a thing that went up in the air about, I don't know, 40, 50 feet. And down on the bottom, they had the pilot who would change directions based on what I told him to do. And we did this. The pilot wasn't very happy about this because this is when one of us, his off days it would have been, and we spend all night doing this, and then they took us off and they showed us where we turned and what we had done, and again I guess I turned out to be pretty good because we got a new airplane to fly over. Now there were about 25 or 30 of us, and there's only 10 new planes to fly over, and we got one of them. And
do you remember meeting your crew and practicing with your original crew? Do you remember the captain of the aircraft? Do you remember his name?
Yeah. He's my buddy. He died. He was from where I came from.
Yeah. Don't remember his name right now?
Gee, that's the one I know. We went to visit, and I know him better than any of them, but I don't know.
That's fine. Your flight overseas, could you tell us about how you got from, from what I'm reading, how you got from Lincoln, Nebraska, overseas?
Okay, well, we got to the United States in this new airplane, and all 10 of us got there. And then we stayed there for a while, and then we went over to Newfoundland, and all 10 of us.
Okay.
And we were told to stay together, and don't use your radios because the Germans were giving you bad readings, and told us, and we took off in the morning when the only thing you could shoot was the sun, and we got up in just 2 minutes, I guess, the people in the back started hollering that we were having smoke back there. And so the pilot immediately landed, and we found out that the gas tank wasn't filled properly and it was leaking. And so they had to wash down the airplane and redo the gasoline. And by the time we took off, we were about 3-4 hours shorter of the other 9 people. And for the first time, I was out of sight of land. I was in an airplane telling them where to go.
And so you were flying, was this the flight that took you to the Azores?
Yeah.
And you were, as the navigator, you're over water, and for the very first time, and you're responsible for finding a little tiny island out in the Atlantic.
Yeah.
If you don't find it, what happens?
Well, those planes don't ever show up because there is no land after that. If you stay to the right of the Azores, there's no ending. You're going down between the peninsulas, out of the sight of land.
And how did you feel with that much responsibility?
I was a nervous wreck, I guess. It didn't bother anybody else. Most of them were playing cards and reading, and my co-pilot was really good with the German language, and he was improving on that. And nobody seemed to be worried about it but me. I didn't tell him when I was supposed to get close, and until I thought I'm close enough for to see something, so I started looking, and we seen where we were going, and when we landed, they thought I was lost because I was so late getting there.
Oh. Then from the Azores, you flew to Italy?
No, I flew to Germany and Africa. Twice.
To Africa, okay.
Twice we landed at different places in Africa.
Okay.
And the third day we drove to Italy.
Do you remember, according to this document, you arrived in Italy on July 7th, 1944, and it says, and you turned over your nice new airplane.
Yeah.
What does that mean when you turned it over? Does that mean you just said, hey, here we are, or did you have to give it to somebody?
The pilots, or the people that are together there, initiate what airplane in any time you're gonna go flying, they'll tell you what plane is yours. You never have your own plane. And
so when you arrived in Italy, and you were there, did you practice before you went on bombing mission?
They made us go out on the Adriatic and come back so that you could see what you expect to see when you're coming back on a mission and you're in trouble. You know where you are. So it was mostly farmland we were going over.
So landing and taking off in Italy with the B-24 bomber, were you supporting the France invasions, the southern France invasions?
No.
Or what?
We didn't know this, but we were the beginning of the southern France invasion. We were over there, and my first mission over there was to the railroad station where we tried to bomb it out so it couldn't be used anymore.
Okay. How'd that go?
Well, it was, they had good artillery, and they were giving us a hard time. The airplane in front of us just blew apart, That's what happens is they get a direct hit. And we got hit to some extent. And as we got left the target and turned to come home, we found out that we couldn't raise the bomb.
The bomb bay doors?
Bomb bay doors wouldn't close. And the pilot called me. Actually, as of my job was concerned, we were together in the formation and we just were following if we could keep up. So he called me. I was up on the nose and I crawled through where the underneath the pilot and the co-pilot and around the other equipment, and I come out on the end of the where the vehicle was there, and with the bomb bay not closing, I had to stand on it and reach underneath where the pilot and co-pilot was and do it manually. Well, I did it manually and it would close them just a little bit at a time. And so I kept doing it until I closed them, but what I was doing was whatever we do to use it to close the bomb bay was shooting out into the nose of the airplane. And I was drowning out the navigator, the bombardier, and the nose gunner. But the bombardier was getting soaked. He couldn't move. He couldn't get out of there. And I didn't know what I was doing with him. And I was going to have to do it anyhow to keep the airplane in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
But the bombardier and I got together, and the other missions, we asked the pilot that I could fly behind him up on top. And because he had the same equipment that I had, really.
And so, according to this document, you had several missions over many places in Europe. But I'd like to just go to the one that apparently you were shot down. I believe it was over Budapest, Hungary, yeah, on July 27th, 1944. Yeah. Could you tell us? Can you relive that day? What happened?
To relive it, I don't know. See, I was flying behind the pilot, and I know there was guns flying, bullets flying all over from the airplanes. And then all of a sudden, the pilot blew the whistle and to leave. And they opened the door between me and him, and the flames just poured through there. And at this time I remembered we didn't wear our parachutes. We wore the things that you hook onto, but nobody wore them because they were in the way of doing your business.
Okay.
So I crawled on the floor, grabbed my parachute and pulled it back, and I'm standing on this piece of metal about 8 inches wide and about less than a foot wide where the bombs were on either side of it, and they were holding up the bombs there, and I was able to squeeze between it and hook one side of my parachute. Well, I found out I left my parachute there, and I had to crawl back the second time through the fire and back to, again to the bomb bay. And there I was able to squeeze between the, where the bombs are hanging, and I hooked mine up on the one side, but I couldn't turn myself to hook the other side of the mat out of the
parachute,
and just about then the pilot came barreling down and in 2 seconds flat hooked me up and said go. And I did.
When you bailed out, was that the first time ever bailed out of a plane?
Yeah, we used to make fun of that to the people who were flying with. When we practiced this, and they said, you don't need practice in that. He said, well, you'll know when to go. And he was right.
Did everybody get out of your B-24?
No, when I was hanging back there with the parachute trying to hook it up, I could see the four people in the back of him were just laying all over. Nobody was helping, nobody. They were dead. I assumed they were dead. I wasn't there that long either, you know. And I learned later that those four people, nobody got back there to find out what they were, and they knew they couldn't get back there.
All right, so you bailed out and your parachute opened.
Yeah.
Okay, and you landed. What happened when you landed?
Well, when it opened and I looked up, big spots of brown, it was ready to blow up.
Your parachute.
The parachute was ready to go. I can't imagine it. I looked down where I was going, and I was in a forest with some empty fields, and I hit an empty field, luckily enough. And I got pulled along quite a ways until I was able to collapse it and unhook it. And then I knew I was always told to hide the parachute and get away from there and see what you can do from there. Well, that's what I did.
Then what happened?
What happened is I was walking along the fields against the end of it where it was, I was supported a little bit, but I see three people waving at me. And while I knew there weren't many people that helped you over there, I had no other choice. I guess they'd seen me and I hoped they were friends. But when I got over there too, then they knocked me down with the river farmers, knocked me down with a shovel, and one guy had a pitchfork, I think, and put it on my chest, and they were arguing away like that, and all of a sudden a couple soldiers showed up and took us to their thing,
Were you able to understand the German?
No.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. And Russian language is terrible. You could be there for months and not know it. But terrible.
All right, so then the Germans took you to a prison camp?
German took me to a little jail. I wouldn't fit more than two people. Small town. And I was there, I don't know, an hour, maybe an hour. And then a truck came and put me in a bigger truck. And then again, I waited, and at this point, I seen my pilot and co-pilot, so I knew they were well That's the only two I ever did see.
How about your injuries? What kind of injuries did you sustain?
Well, I was injured to the effect that I couldn't get at anything. I was burned all of my whole outfit were burned. And I couldn't use, I got all of my escape equipment and I had a gun and I don't know what I would have done with it, but I had it. But,
were you burned on your hands or your feet?
Everything. See, these are still never.
Those were burns that you were sustained from your B-24 Navigator position.
Yeah. They took me to the hospital and they had to cut everything off me. Yeah. I had to cut everything.
And you were conscious the whole time?
I was hospitalized. I woke up and in the Budapest hospital. And I was there, I don't know. I guess it wasn't as bad as I thought. I know my arms got really swollen and I was full on the sides of me. Where liquid was coming out of it and everything, and so I just got better.
Before we go on, do you remember?
Can I go to the bathroom?
Sure. We'll stop it here. That's a good question. Let me go back prior to you bailing out of the B-24, mm-hmm. Do you recall what caused your airplane to catch on fire?
Well, we were attacked by fighter planes from both Germany and they both had their own airports.
It says here in this document that it was an ME-109 that circled you as you were parachuting down to the ground. Do you recall that?
Yeah, and you know, I didn't tell people very many of that I'd seen that, and I just got a letter or seen a letter from somewhere that these people that went back later said there was an ME-109 that had crashed not too far away from us. So I guess maybe I did see it.
Okay, so let's go back to when you were captured and we were talking about your wounds. What happened after you got out of that small room? Did the Germans take you somewhere?
The small room, you mean the first place I went into? Well, when the army came and picked me up, pulled me up, I didn't have any shoes. They flew away when the parachute opened, and I always had tender feet.
Your boots? Your boots fell off,
they flew off. Yeah, when you jerk.
You jerked so hard, the boots fell off.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Okay.
And I didn't have shoes anymore until I was up in Stalag 3 and ready to leave for the Russians before I got shoes.
Okay, let's go back to when you didn't have shoes. What happened?
Yeah, I didn't have shoes. I was in this little jail. One person watched me. And then a truck came, and I think I got it, 8 or 10 people in it. There was one or two that I knew. And the third time, it was just starting to get dark. And that's when I got to the hospital. And they took me in, and they kept questioning me as to what I did on the airplane, but I could never did convince them that I was a navigator.
What did they think you did?
They said I flew it. They thought I was a pilot or the gunner, one or the other. That's what they knew most, pilots and gunners.
Okay.
So, then, you see, they smeared me with grease and stuff, and I don't remember anything until they started unwrapping me, and when I eventually got where I could see, you know, I seen more, I was under more bombings than I flew. The Russians and the English were bombing where my hospital was.
Can you tell us some more stories about the hospital? Some stories that happened?
Yeah, it is. I don't know that they did much for me. They whatever they did, that grease, it was pretty good, I guess. But I don't know how long I was there.
Did you have new prisoners come in every day when you saw planes go over?
Yeah, but they were mostly not Americans. They were the German,
the Russians?
Russians, they were going over, and so help me, they were dropping bombs by hand, throwing them out as a sweet thing. We think they were just pushing them out. You could see them. They were very low.
Did you ever run into Russian prisoners?
Did I what?
Did you ever see Russian prisoners?
Well, I did in the last 2 weeks of me.
There's a story here that says they had some of these Russians that you ran into apparently never saw.
Yeah. When they got shot down and came to the hospital, they never knew what a toilet was. Yeah, they'd stand on it and miss it. It was a mess. It was nice. It was in good shape until I was glad to get out of the hospital. It was good and terrible. Did I tell you about my card game?
Yes. We're going to talk about that right now.
Oh.
Go ahead.
The Hungarians took me across the Danube to the other side where they put me in. Gave me to the Germans, and the Germans put me in really an old jail, and it had one little table and a hole in the ground, and on the table I couldn't get the stand on it before they were rapping at the door and telling me to get up. So anyhow, all I had was a table and a piece of paper, like the size you got there. And I didn't know what to do with it. I couldn't write. I didn't have the right letter or anything. So eventually I ended up with knowing that I had my wings where I could stab the thing, and I made a card game out of it. I put the four cards in the corners, and then the middle of 1, 2, 3, 4, and I played solitaire. I don't think I ever made a game. At that time, incidentally, the people were scratching their names on the walls, and I seen two of them that I went to school with that were there ahead of me.
Tell me real quick about when you were in prison. How they spoke with you. Did they know English? Did the Germans know English? How did they communicate with you?
I didn't communicate with anybody when I was in Hungary. Uh-huh. With the Germans, I went and I was interviewed by them twice, and they were very knowledgeable about my efforts during the whole time I was in the army and before that.
Could you explain?
They were initiating this information to show me how much they knew, so you might as well say, tell me everything you know. Well, everything I knew was nothing.
Can you give me an example of what they knew?
Well, they knew every time I got a promotion or when I went to school, they'd tell me when I went to school and what I took. They were college people from the United States. They were.
Did they know where you went? Where you trained?
They knew everything I did. Before, even before I went over. You know that there was a lot of places closed in Scranton and other towns where they had bars, and in fact, I was married in a place that was closed during the wars.
So did they know you were from Scranton?
I don't know if they told me that or not.
Okay. So tell me what happened next. Where did you go?
Well, when the Germans got enough to fill the boxcar, I gathered this is what they'd done. They put me in the boxcar and along with the enough to more than fill it up, and they had these breads that they expected us to live on.
And what was that bread called, do you recall?
Well, I don't know what they call it. We call it terrible. It was a terrible. He didn't like it.
In your document.
But you took it.
It states that it was called ERSATE bread. And in parentheses, it says made from sawdust.
It's what we called it. Not what the Germans called it. I don't know what they called it. But that's unfortunately, we found me just sick. Mm-hmm. And you didn't have anything else to eat. So you were sick. Everybody was.
So you became a prisoner in July of 1944.
Yeah.
And according to this document, when you were introduced to this bread, it was around December of 1944. Okay. And so you were in this boxcar, and then where did the boxcar go, or the train go?
Well, eventually it went to Stalag 3 up in Poland, but we stopped at the Cologne, we used to take turns sitting down and laying. We had so many of us there, and this one day, I was sitting with my back to the door, and the door opened, and they grabbed me and pulled me off the train, and I didn't know where I was going, but they took me to a place where they, like the milk people use for milk, they're big things, and it was full of soup. So, but then it was up to us to do what we wanted with it. We didn't have any, you didn't have to get a handful or something. You didn't have anything to use to eat or but we managed to use it, I guess. And the only time we got off the train is about once a day they'd go open it in the field and push us all out and had soldiers all around there and you do your crapping and you're back in. But it was never long enough. It was a mess.
So you said you were going to Stalag 3?
3A, yeah.
Can you tell me about that?
Well, Stalag 3A was the initial point of them putting the airmen. It was all airmen. It was, I'll tell you, I knew very little when I got there, but they interviewed me like the Germans did. They would say, where are you from? And where? And then they would tell you thanks and bring in people that lived in that same place. And then interview you. This is us interviewing me. So that the Germans were trying to infiltrate us. And they found that out. And so now they were catching the infiltrators before they infiltrated. Oh.
All right, so when you arrived at Stalag 3, is there something famous about Stalag 3?
Well, that's where the thing took place, the big escape took place there.
The movie, The Great Escape? Huh? That's the movie, The Great Escape? Yeah. Is that where that happened in Stalag 3?
That's the movie, yeah.
Were you there before or after that escape?
I was there after. That was in... They escaped in April, and I got there around August or something like that. But it was nasty because the Germans themselves took out all the guys that were working there that could have helped in the Great Escape. They took them all out and sent them to Russia. That's Pimberley. They weren't doing too good in Russia right then. They gave us, they tacked the signs up that they would supply us if we changed, but they would give us what we needed to fight the Russians because we were gonna do it anyhow after the war was over. That's what.
Could you talk about your time there in Stalag 3, some more? Stories.
Well, we were, what was it, 12 of us were in each little room, and we were to live that way. Mm-hmm. And when every day when it was time to eat, every thing like us would send one person to get as much as they could from where they were handing it out. And then when they got that person got it and brought it back to us, then it was again split up so that everybody got the same as much as possible.
Did you get any letters from home while you were prisoners?
I didn't think I sent any, I didn't think I got any, but now when I read what I brought down with me, I don't know.
Okay.
I did get some, but I think my Aunt Hattie, I don't think I got any from my, I don't know if my dad and mother wrote much of anything. Fourth grade, you know, not much.
Did there come a time when you left Stalag 3?
Well, surely. The Russians were there. They were not long. You hear the shots and the German airplanes are going over and back, and you could see they were beat up in no time at all. We knew it was coming to an end. We were all saying home for Christmas, except it didn't work.
What happened?
The Germans made that big push. Whatever they call it, like they have a name. We have a name for it. I don't know what it is now, but the Germans almost did it. Almost did it.
So what happened next? You're there in Stalag III. Did you stay there until the end of the war?
Oh no. I spent all over Germany. We moved every day. We left in the end of January, and we were picked up the end of April. But in between, we just moved.
Instead of money, what was the currency? What did you use for currency?
Oh, I was rich. Cigarettes. I was rich.
Why were you rich?
I was rich. Even the Germans, civilians, they loved cigarettes, especially ours. We didn't even, not even give them a whole one.
How did you get American cigarettes?
How what?
How did you get the cigarettes?
Well, what I got was a sled. When we were leaving Stalag III, we were standing there for hours and hours. They were letting them, each group go and go somewhere, I don't know. But we were the last group to go. And over at the end of the when the Germans were there, there was a barracks, and we knew it was full of stuff. That's where they used to get our supplies and that. And we were told by our leaders that we could go there, but be careful. So we went there, and you could take like two boxes of Red Cross food, which is good.
Yeah.
But try carrying it for a couple of days, and it's not so good anymore.
Could you tell us what the Red Cross was sending you to eat? What was in those packages?
Everything. We would get maybe one or sometimes two for the 12 people. And it was, the English were different.
Was it mainly candy, chocolates?
No, not candy. No. Things that you would think you'd need. So the things that people knew you needed, the Red Cross people. You know, the Red Cross people, all the while Stalag III existed, the Red Cross people would come and look us over, and you could tell, be careful now, Red Cross people would be coming tomorrow because they gave us a little more drink to eat or something the day before.
So when you left Stalag III, you said you walked?
Yeah, I walked.
How long did you walk? Was it a real long walk, or?
I think it was 3.5 months.
3.5 months? All you did was just walk around?
I did it, walk. We were put in a factory that made cement things, and sometimes the heater things would be still burning. Boy, did we like that.
Now, according to your document, at one point in time after the walk was almost over, you had well over 150,000 POWs of all nationalities near the camp, and there was a rumor that Hitler gave an order to shoot everyone. Do you recall that?
Yeah.
What happened? What was going on?
Well, rumors are rumors and rumors. You get one started and it goes all over. But what they did was they emptied one of the groups and put us in there. They're full of every person you can think of. They emptied it. And I don't know what they did with them, but they put us there. And the first thing we did there, they put us in barracks. And the first thing we did was start tearing them apart and heating the stuff, you know. And then it got to the point within a week or two, they wouldn't let us in the barracks anymore because they were going to collapse.
So it says here that on April 29th, 1945...
That was a big day.
What happened?
Let's call it the troops cleaned out the where the Germans used to stand up and aim their guns at us, and we went to the town, I guess, a little bit, but...
So on that day, the troops came in and they liberated you from the prison camp.
Yeah, okay. They got rid of the ones that were fighting to keep us there, yeah.
And how long did it take you to get back to Italy or to England or wherever they took you? Tell us that story, what happened.
Well, what happened was that Patton come through and said, don't go anywhere, stay there, we'll pick you up. And he left a lot of food. After 2 days, I guess, and nobody picked us up, we started to leave on our own. And so me and another guy, I don't know if there's two other guys, we started walking, and the first place we came to, the Americans were taking everything that moves off of the Germans and storing them. And so they said, oh, we'll give you bicycles with little motors on them. They go down either way pretty good. And we go down that same day. And we were down in Munich. And they chased us away. They said, you can't go down there, they're still fighting. Go out this way. And so we went out that way, and we were come to Dachau, where they were killing the Jews. We didn't know that either. The Americans chased us away from there. They didn't want us to go in there. And so I think we were gone 3 days, I think.
Then what happened?
I took the hat.
Oh, tell me the story about the hat.
Story about the hat.
I just walked over to your shelf and pulled off what it looks to be a German hat.
Oh, yeah.
And it says, in German, I cannot read it. Can you tell me the story about this? It says Militar.
Yeah, well, we were running all over the country down there and going in the houses and getting enough knees or sleep. 2 days I got sleep. And we get home at home is where we were parking for so long. And we looked at one another, two of us, I think it was, and they looked at us and says, what are we going to do? We're going to go again? And I says, I don't think so. I says, if they haven't come here in 2 or 3 days, they're going to come quick. And so we were discussing it, the two of us, and another group came up. And they were walking, and they had been doing what we were doing. And we got talking together, and they said they were going to go back out again. And we said, well, we weren't going to go back out. So they said, I'll tell you what, and I don't know who did it. We gave them the bicycles and they gave me the hat. And the next day they came and took us and put us out in the trucks and put us up at an airport. And we were picked up the next day.
It says that you were picked up by a C-47.
Yeah, one of ours.
And flown to France.
Yeah.
And it was called Camp Lucky Strike.
Camp Lucky Strike. Every cigarette you could think of is a camp. There was a lot of them. And I guess starting when we were liberated until we got done, we could eat whatever we wanted to.
Yeah, it says here that the mess halls were open 24 hours a day.
Yeah,
yeah. And you could eat as much as you want. I bet you that felt good.
Well, it did, but it took us only 3 or 4 days to come home in the boats. They come home pretty good.
Says do you remember where you left in France? Do you remember where you left France?
Le Havre.
The port of Le Havre, France.
And they gave us uniforms.
Yeah.
Any kind. Sometimes it didn't fit that well or whatever, but it was not a uniform. And I got the first boat up.
And do you remember where you arrived? In the United States?
No.
It had to be
April. May, first of May.
It says here on your document, it says that you sailed from France on May 18th, 1945, and you arrived at Fort Dix, New Jersey on June 4th, 1945. So you're home feeling really good on June 4th, 1945.
Yeah. And married 2 weeks after that. I think it was 2 weeks.
You were married July 14th, 1945.
Doesn't say anything about what us looked like.
No.
I was 147 pounds when I enlisted. I don't know what I was over there, but when I stepped off the railroad train in Scranton, I was 165.
Wow.
The people there that was going to pick me up couldn't believe it.
And so after your military service, you went back to
Michigan
and went back to your job at Ford?
Yeah. No, I didn't go back to Ford. By then I was in, I don't know whether I was in...
I remember Chrysler. Did you go to Chrysler?
No, I left Chrysler to go to the state. Chrysler started laying off to
the state of Michigan.
Yeah.
All right. And I recall you saying something about you were an auditor for the Treasury.
Yeah.
Department and that's where you stayed until you retired.
Well, I didn't. Have to travel anymore. I didn't do a lot of things anymore. I had a good deal.
Where did you live up there in Michigan? What was the name of the place?
Good question. Lynn, you know that?
Gull Lake?
Oh, Gull Lake, but that was not the city.
Oh, no. I was just
Gull
wondering.
Lake is where I stayed. Yeah.
Okay.
That's right. What I showed you. We were the first really group that started playing golf there.
Okay.
And when we left, they had five places to play golf within a half hour's drive.
So after 1987, I believe, or maybe it was prior to 1987, did you have a motorhome?
Yeah.
What did you do with the motorhome?
Well, we decided, Eleanor did, we're going to see every state in the Union. We must have spent 3 weeks or four up in Alaska. But we went to every capital and every state. I think we did. We thought we did, anyhow.
I'm going to jump over to a couple of final questions.
Yeah.
Can you give us any advice to future generations? Some good advice.
Well, other than to think about tomorrow so you can enjoy it.
And one last question is, do you recall a day that you had with Honor Flight?
Well, see, I never left, really.
Can you tell us about Honor Flight?
Yeah, I can tell you. We went through 2, 3, 4 places where they did various things for us. If the Honor Flight was on a train trip or an airplane or whatever, we were on an airplane or a train trip, but it wasn't really.
Was it a good day? Did you enjoy it?
I enjoyed it, and I was happy I didn't spend 12 hours out there.
And just for the record, you were assigned to the 15th Air Force, 455th Bomb Group, and the 741st Squadron, is that correct?
Yeah.
Bob, is there anything else you would like to add? Is there anything else that I may have missed or you would like to say before we end the interview?
Yeah, I'd like to, but I don't know what I will do. You mean I'm talking to somebody that's in the Army?
Anybody.
Well, I don't know. I made the Army a big thing for me. especially after I found out I could go to all those reunions. They were great. We got all over the country.
So you were happy to serve your country?
Yeah, I was, really. I just wouldn't do it again.
All right, this ends the oral history of Robert Bob Emick. Mr. Emick, America thanks you for your service.
Oh, thank you for listening.
Mr. Emick, you gave me showed me a box that has a bunch of metal parts in it, and I wanted to capture this moment. I'm touching, I hope, about 10 or 15 beat up metal pieces of metal that are in a box. Can you explain what these pieces are?
Well, we went back twice to where my plane crashed.
You actually went back to Europe where your plane crashed?
Yeah.
Okay.
What happened is I always wanted to do it. And Eleanor wanted to go down the river. So we did that the first time. And second time. What happened is I get this magazine, like this here, that says a lot of things. And there was a letter in there from, where was I going? Where was I shot down again? Over in Budapest, calls us on the phone and says they would love to talk to us. When are you going to come? And we told them we were scheduled 3-4 weeks later. And they called back and says, can you change your schedule at all? And I said, no, I got too many things that I can't do. And they were going to get married on the day that we were going to leave. And I said, well, we can't change. Well, they called back the next day and said, we canceled our marriage. And they met us. And they were going to take us to where the crash was. And they have a museum there, and the people during the war could tell you where every airplane crashed in there, and even tanks, or the Dr. Kent tank or something big.
So you're saying that you found your airplane that crashed near Budapest.
Yeah.
You found people that knew it was you that were in that was in that airplane.
Yeah.
And you went to that aircraft.
The three people that were killed in an airplane. Okay. I couldn't believe it.
And did you actually go out and see it?
Sure. I went out.
And did you, what was left of it?
Well, by then it was scavenged from everybody. All you found was mounds of earth where the propellers hit.
And where did you get these parts from?
Well, the people that took us out there dug them up.
Did they dig them up right in front of you, or did they already have them?
No, right in front of us.
Right in front of you?
Yeah.
You saw people dig into the ground and pick up pieces?
We didn't have anything to hold them with. Eleanor took her jacket off and filled it up. And we went back to their town, and I was going to bring them home, but that didn't work because the post office over there wouldn't send them, so I left them, and then they sent it to me months later.
So you have actual parts from your airplane that was shot down by an ME-109.
Or 190s.
Or 190s. Also, one last thing, and then we'll close. I have a picture of a man who's in a Messerschmitt.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about the picture of this man? Who is it? Who is this man? Do you remember?
I know him. I didn't see him alive. But these people we were with knew, they flew out of an airport right where we were. Mm-hmm. And they told us who shot us down.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't say it, I don't know who.
So those people,
I didn't know anything about it.
So those people told you that through their history digging into the records and stuff that they've determined that this man is the individual that shot your airplane down.
Yeah.
And you never were able to see him again?
Well, 3 days later he was killed.
Oh, he was?
That's in there too.
Okay. All right.